This is a Spooky Scotty production. Expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Well, good evening, everybody. You are listening to The Buzz on ZTalkRadio.com. It's our favorite night of the week. You are here with your favorite host and hostess. You've got me, of course, Kevin, and...
Molly.
The intros.
Well, you talk about host and hostess. I sound like a hostess cupcake.
Hey, nothing wrong with cupcakes. Nothing wrong with them at all. Oh. And I was doing so good on my diet. And there you go. There you go. Oh, we were in Walmart today, and we were going past the snack cake aisle, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, look at all that goodness.
That stuff doesn't even tempt me.
Oh.
I can walk past potato chips, cookies, cupcakes, donuts, nothing. Doesn't bother me a bit.
Oh, I've been doing good. I'm kind of proud of myself. I stepped on the scale today, and I was rather pleased with the results. But, man, it cost me in mileage. It cost.
So. Yeah. Run a little extra then, huh?
Man, yeah. Well, today I only ran enough to warm up my, you know, warm up and get the joints moving. But yesterday I had a really, really good run. So
good.
Now I'm on the treadmill until, you know, a couple more weeks so that I can just concentrate on just pure burning calories rather than mileage.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I can't do is run. I have never been able to run.
But you have been putting on the mileage this weekend.
I have. I really have. I tell you, did the ghost walk with my grandson's class Thursday. And got ready for my yard sale, moving sale. Even though we haven't sold the house yet. We're moving things anyway, selling them off or moving them one direction or another, and was up until 11 o'clock, I think, Thursday night, got early Friday to the cold, damp weather and did about $60 worth that day, I don't know, and then Saturday was a little bit better and ended up with a total of about $1,300, so I did quite well. Got a lot of furniture moved out, sold, and tonight everybody was here picking up furniture. It's been like Molly and a truck and Molly in a truck or Molly and
two Mollies in a truck.
Two men in a truck or but it's just me in a truck. So yeah, we've been moving right along here, so but I am war smack out.
Yes, but you made $1,300.
I did. To add to my moving money. My moving cross country money.
No. No. I can't. Too soon, Molly. Too soon.
Yeah. Well, we're still going to be doing the show, so.
I know, but it's not going to be the same as just having you here with me.
Yeah, we're going to And I can still do investigations from time to time when I come back. And so it'll all work out.
Yeah, I know. So,
Oh, goodness. Everybody's joining us in the chat room tonight. So if you're not in the chat room yet, get in here and
don't
join
be.
us all.
Yeah, and if you'd like to call into the show with any questions for our guest, who I'm going to introduce here shortly, then you can call in at 262-672-2488. And man, we had a hell of a show last week, didn't we, Molly?
We did. That's a good show.
Yeah, we were joined by Karen Dahlman, the Ouijologist, and had a couple of, had a good call in. And I love a intelligent guest who presents well. And she was very convincing. Really kind of changed my viewpoint about the use of an Ouija board. Now, like I said at the end of the show, it's not like we're going to run right out and get one and integrate it with our investigations, but I didn't know you could do all that with an Ouija board, Molly.
Well, I knew you could do a lot with them, but not all that she had talked about, and that was very interesting to me. I thought, well, that's kind of neat. And again, it's a tool, but I've always been a little leery of them, and I think most people are, but the more I got to thinking about it, it's like people use pendulums and do table tipping all the time, and it's really the same thing. It's just another way of doing it. It's all still calling in the same thing. So,
But you could even use an Ouija board to get in touch with your higher self.
yes.
And, I was not aware of that. Or maybe it's just something that I've never really thought about.
Well, I hadn't either. I hadn't either. So.
But
Kind of different. And then it was funny about her talking to her cats or something through the Ouija board.
yes, her cat's speaking to her, and the cat's wishing to write a book.
I'd hate to see what kind of book my cat would write.
Something along the lines of 50 Shades of Grey or something. That's all we need.
Probably, I don't know. I'm not sure, I don't. It'd be titled The Cat's Meow, I'm sure.
Oh my goodness. Well, tonight we have Jeffrey Rich.
We
It's,
do.
yeah, speaking and getting in touch with your higher self or in touch with spirit or even animals. Jeffrey Rich is a 21st century shamanic practitioner and instructor. And he's a local guy, Molly, right here in
Yep, he is
Huntsville.
from Huntsville. I've taken several of his classes.
But,
And he's great.
yeah, well. Yes, he is. One of the great things about him is he loves giving people the tools to live their best life they can and to find their own light or getting in touch with themselves or their higher selves. He brings the amazing love and light of the Andean cosmology, and this is one of his joys in life. Now, since the 90s, he's made his living as a private practitioner and educator in the healing arts. He's consulted worldwide as a massage therapist, a licensed massage therapy instructor. Boy, we need to get in touch with him.
Boy, I could use a good massage right now.
And more recently, as a shamanic spiritual healing practitioner. Yes, you could use him right now. So he
Well,
is
good.
going to be with us here on the show.
Yeah, he's gonna call in while we're on news break, probably around 8:20, and then we'll have him on just right after our news break.
Yes, we will. And well, we have a cat in the chat room that does Reiki.
Yep, that would be Merlin.
Merlin.
Yeah, Bob's cat's name's Merlin.
And then somebody else is saying, well, hello, Cupcake.
Yeah, well, that's Bob, too.
So.
Oh, the hostess Cupcake. That I will be known by from now on, probably.
What's going on, Cupcake?
It's like an old 20s movie, doesn't it? Like, good golly. My brain just went, shoot, who's the guy in Casablanca?
Oh my goodness, if you hadn't have asked me, I could have told you. Humphrey Bogart.
Yes, thank you. I'm just brain dead.
Yes. Of all the donut shops in the world, you had to walk into mine.
Yeah.
Oh man, this show is going fast. We're terrible. we better hurry it up and get the guest on so they don't suffer anymore.
Oh me. Well, you know, I literally had just walked in the house just before we came on air. We had people picking up furniture from the yard sale the other day, so tonight was loading night and getting rid of everything, and literally just walked in. So I'm still rattled from that. That's why I couldn't come up with the Humphrey Bogart. Because usually I'm pretty good at old movies and actors and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night's trivia night at the Mexican restaurant too, and I gotta tell you, last week. There's five of us that play every week, and we always win something. It can be anywhere from the $25 big certificate for food or whatever, all the way down to a cheese dip. Well, several weeks we get cheese dips, you know. With the last question, you have to bid 20 points. You can bid up to 20 points or nothing at all, depending on, you know, how you feel about your answer. Well, last week, we were kind of low in our score all through the whole game, and the last question, it was one that I was sure of anyway. I was 100% sure of, so I said, "Oh, let's bid 20 points." Everybody's going, "Are you sure? Should we do that much?" I said, "Well, we could either win it or we can win a cheese dip." I said, "Which do you want?" I said, "You know, go big or go home." So I said,
"Tell him, Molly.
Do the whole 20 points." And you know, we won the $25 gift certificate.
Go big or go home. Yes, like, Molly.
Yeah, it's like, are we really going to worry about a cheese dip?
I can, you know, buy a cheese dip.
We would have walked home with it, went home with a cheese dip otherwise, you know, if we'd been wrong. And I thought, well, shoot, let's go for it.
Say, "I'm sick of cheese dip. We're going for broke."
I am. For 3 weeks, we've been eating cheese dip, and I'm starting to gain a little bit. You know, I don't need a cheese dip. You know, and every week, we've been playing, I guess, for maybe seven or eight months, and every week we've won something. Before we actually started playing, we played the question between... you know, for the people that weren't playing the game, it was just a question they throw out there for non-game players, and we'd win that every week. So we're pretty well known around there. now we got the other teams looking at us like, okay, you know, what are y'all up to this week?
They're going to start. It's almost like a bingo parlor. You know, you got your regulars there, and they're all so protective of their turf.
Yeah,
they're cheating. They're cheating.
No, we're not allowed to cheat. You're not allowed to have cell phones or anything. You know, so because he goes around and checks, and if he catches you, you're thrown out of the game. So, but it's fun, you know.
Kind of like casino security.
You know, I used to think that trivia was, you know, older stuff, but they generate questions on the computer now that's liable to throw out you know, current events or anything. So you got to be on your toes.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, where do they get their questions?
It is a computer-generated game that he comes up with. He works for ZYP during the day, and I don't know if this company is owned by ZYP or whatever that goes around and does all these trivia games at the Mexican restaurants or wherever, but he never knows what they're going to be until the night of.
Mm-hmm.
And when he, you know, turns it on, sets the thing up, well, then it'll pop up the questions. And I don't know the name of the company that actually furnishes the questions.
Mm.
But some of them are kind of wild.
Like, what is Lady Gaga's real name?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Oh, me either. So I'd just get a cheese dip.
Well, you got quite a few answers that, you know, questions that you can go through before you down to the halftime question, and then they give you a halftime question. It's usually five different, multiple choice kind of questions. And you can do pretty good on those. Yeah, it depends on how many people are playing, how many groups are playing against you to know if you're going to end up with a cheese dip or not. You may, you know.
Say, what a cheesy thing to do. Yeah. Get it.
Yah, yah, yah.
Wah, wah, wah. Well, Molly, I tell you what, let's go to our first news break, and then when we get back, we'll be joined by Jeffrey.
All righty.
Well, everybody, you are listening. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Molly.
No, I was just going to remind them to get their speed dial ready and for their questions and comments, and join us in the chat room for those that aren't already in.
And that phone number, if you'd like to call in, is 262-672-2488. And we strongly encourage you to call in with your questions. If you're a little shy about it, of course, you can ask them in the chat room, but it's not as much fun.
But you got to be in the chat room to ask.
That's true. So all of you listeners who are listening outside of the chat room, it's not as much fun just sitting there in front of your radios. So why don't you come on into the chat room? That is at ztalkradio.com. And once you're there at our face page, all you have to do is click listen and chat, and it'll take you right to it. But everybody, we're going to go to our first news break. So if you'd stick with us, we'll be right back with Jeffrey Rich. Everybody, just stick with us and we'll be right back.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. An agreement in principle has been reached on the broad international trade agreement known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It involves 12 nations, including the U.S. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, would lower tariffs and set some common trade standards. It has been opposed by some lawmakers who fear it will mean the loss of U.S. jobs. President Obama released a statement this morning saying the pact will let American businesses compete fairly around the world. A Pentagon official has commented on last Saturday's airstrike in Afghanistan that hit a hospital run by the medical charity Doctors Without Borders. Army General John Campbell says the airstrike came after the Afghan government asked for help.
We have now learned that on October 3rd, Afghan forces advised that they were taking fire from enemy positions and asked for air support from U.S. forces. An airstrike was then called to eliminate the Taliban threat, and several civilians were accidentally struck. This is different from the initial reports, which indicated that U.S. forces were threatened and that the airstrike was called on their behalf.
22 people were killed and many others injured. Doctors Without Borders is asking for an independent investigation and says the bombing was a war crime. South Carolina's historic flooding seems to have eased after 2 days of record-breaking downpours. But even though most of the rain has stopped, the emergency is not over. NPR's Tim Fitzsimmons has more.
A few parts of northeastern South Carolina, around Myrtle Beach and Florence, are expected to get a few more inches of rain today, but the downpours are mostly over. The risk of flash flooding has diminished, but river flooding is expected to go on for days. Derek Becker with the South Carolina Emergency Management Division said that early reports from Clarendon County described towns made totally inaccessible by floodwaters, as well as washed-out bridges and roads. Charleston International Airport said it's had nearly 18 inches of rain in the past 5 days. Major interstates around the state remain closed, including I-95 and I-26. Tim Fitzsimmons, NPR News, Charleston, South Carolina.
In Syria, Islamic State militants have blown up a trio of ancient arches in the city of Palmyra. NPR's Allison Muse has more.
The towering arches, Palmyra's Arc de Triomphe, were a hallmark of the 2,000-year-old city. Now activists say ISIS has blown them up. Be'er al-Nasr tells NPR he saw the aftermath of the destruction, and only the support columns remain. ISIS seized Palmyra from government forces in May. Since then, the militants have destroyed two ancient temples, deemed heretical. Syria's antiquities director says all transportable artifacts were removed from Palmyra before its fall. Government warplanes launch regular raids on the ISIS-held city, but activists say the strikes target civilian areas and feel like collective punishment. Allison Muse, NPR News, Beirut.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are up about 160 points. You're listening to NPR News. The Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine has been awarded to three scientists. William Campbell, Satoshi Omuru, and Yu-Yu Tu are being honored for developing therapies to treat diseases caused by parasites. William Campbell and Satoshi Omura found a new drug that helped treat river blindness. Yu-Yu Tu discovered a drug in her work to help treat malaria. Some 300 Catholic bishops and delegates from all over the world are meeting in Rome. They'll focus on challenges to the family. NPR's Silvia Poggioli reports the meeting, known as a synod, was preceded by a dispute over homosexuality.
This synod is part two of a process Pope Francis initiated 2 years ago with questionnaires sent to local churches on key challenges to the modern family. In his homily Sunday, Francis said the church must be a bridge and not close its doors to those who suffer. The first synod was marked by clashes between reform-minded and conservative bishops on how to deal with divorced and civilly remarried Catholics and gays who want to be part of the church. This synod is likely to be as divisive given many cultural differences between Western and Third World bishops. On the eve of the synod, the Vatican fired a theologian who revealed he's a gay priest, saying the very public coming out was aimed at subjecting the synod to undue media pressure on gay issues. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
The Coast Guard says that a U.S.-based ship that went missing near the Bahamas in a hurricane has sunk. The El Faro went down in the middle of Hurricane Joaquin, which at one point had winds of 130 miles per hour. 33 people were aboard the ship. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
From the latest newscast to the newest podcast, NPR One handpicks local, national, and international stories based on what you like. Download the NPR One app, a new way to experience public radio.
You are listening to The Buzz on the ZTalk Radio Network. Imagine the possibilities. Now back to the show with Kevin Thompson and Molly Spence. The best in alternative talk radio.
Welcome back, everybody. You are back with us on The Buzz on ztalkradio.com. And joining us for the next hour, hour and a half, is Jeffrey Rich. Jeffrey, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you, Kevin, Molly, for having me on the show. I'm really excited about it.
We are too.
Good.
I know what kind of work you do and everything. And Kevin's not real familiar, only from what he's read. So I know what kind of work you do. So I'm excited about learning some more of especially the new constellation classes that you've been taking.
Okay. Well, I do a lot of shamanic work. I'm a massage therapist right now. I did a lot of years as a software developer, but was always a really intuitive child. And there was a time when I thought that I needed to really shut off the intuition in order to go to engineering school, which, of course, as we know, you don't really need to shut off one to do the other. But as a kid, I didn't, as a young person, I didn't have anybody to tell me that. And so I just kind of put all the intuition kind of off on a shelf for a while. And after about 20 years of doing software, I just had this really deep need to be doing something that was a little bit more direct with people and healing. And so my first steps were into massage school, and that's where I started taking Reiki classes, and that really began to open the door again to some of those intuitive gifts that I had as a child that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
And, the door just started opening up again. And so I started paying a little bit more attention to what this, what these things were. And after a while of doing Reiki and doing various other kinds of energy medicine, I stumbled onto shamanism. I started studying first with a woman who lives in Kansas City. Her name is Joanna Morris. And she studied back in the 70s and 80s with Michael Harner, who created the Foundation for Shamanic Studies in America. And she was one of his early students and knew him really well. And she came over to Georgia and taught a shamanism class. And I just had some really deep experiences in that very first class and just really kept pursuing it, thinking, what is this? And who are these beings that I'm meeting in these places? And I just, really took to it. And it felt like a remembering rather than learning. It just felt like something that I had been disconnected from a very long time. And so that's how I really got my start in doing the kind of work that I'm doing now. And so let me back up just a little bit and talk a little bit about shamanism. Most teachers of shamanism in America and in many parts of the world, actually, teach a cosmology that is a three-world cosmology. They talk about the upper world, the middle world, and the lower world.
Mm-hmm.
And that cosmology shows up in many, many kinds of cultures around the world. Some cultures have many more worlds. The Norse pantheon, of course, the Norse gods had 9 worlds. And you recall from the Tolkien books, where you talk about Middle Earth.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Middle Earth is actually what we call the Middle World, and it's the same place. So in shamanic journeying, you journey to these shamanic realms to meet with compassionate, helping spirits, and you can go to all sorts of different places, but typically many people go to one of these three worlds. They go to the upper world to speak to a teacher or a guide, and they go to the lower world to speak with power animals, maybe with tree spirits, nature spirits, things like that. And in my early teaching, the middle world was kind of left out. And I kept getting really curious about, well, what is the middle world? And what do you do there? And, what kind of work can be done there? And the simple answer to that is, of course, the middle world is this world that we live in right here, that we, live and breathe and have our daily work in. And it turns out that the other worlds are a little bit safer, a little bit easier to work in, because there are some safeties built in. And the middle world here is the place where everybody's living, all the spirits that are lost, all the nature spirits. So it's a little bit more complex, a little bit more tricky to navigate. And that's why a lot of teachers in America and in other places really don't teach a lot about middle world shamanism. But the middle world is where healing happens. It's the place where our body energies are being expressed. And honestly, if you're working in the middle world, in the place where we are living, and using any kind of a middle world technique or a healing, then it's going to involve your body, which is a little bit different than journeying to the upper world or the lower world, where generally just your spirit goes there. So middle world is a little bit more interesting and complex. And so I want to launch a little bit into some examples of what can you do in the middle world and what do you find in the middle world.
Mm-hmm.
One of the lineages of shamanism that I study is I work with a teacher from Peru in the Andes, in the mountains. And in Peru, there are several different lineages of what we would call shamanic traditions. There's a lineage of plants, spirits, healers in the jungle. There's a lineage of shamans who work on the coastal areas of Peru. And there's a lineage up in the Andes. And the teachers who are in the Andes really are masters of energies in the middle world. They deal with these very fine perceptions of energies, and they have reams of words that describe these phenomena. There's a book, and I can't remember the author, but the title of the book is called Masters of the Living Energy. That's about the Pacos from the Andes and the kinds of things that they do, the kinds of ways that they are interacting with energies in the middle world. And to give you an example of this, in Quechua, the native language of the people there in the Andes, when they meet someone, they have this concept of a three-level meeting. And the first one, the word for that is Tinkui, T-I-N-K-U-I. And what it means is, for instance, if I were to meet you, Molly, for the very first time,
mm-hmm.
At the moment when our energy bodies touch, that is Tinkui. So they're talking about, you know, what do you perceive when the energies of our energy bodies begin to overlap? And then there's the next level of meeting is called Tubai, and that's when you're sort of sizing each other up and, you know, looking each other in the eye and saying, well, you know, what's this person all about and what are their energies all about and what am I experiencing through my body? Basically, how am I reading the other person?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third level of this meeting is called Taque, T-A-Q-E. And what they say about that is when you really, really know someone and you've gotten to know them very, very well and you've created a lot of connection with this person and built a lot of trust, then your energies can join and they can create a state of being that's greater than the sum of these two parts. So
Like a marriage, a spiritual marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yes.
Right.
And so this blending of these energies is quite profound and quite beautiful. The shamans there, the Pacos in the Andes, have all these classification systems for the quality of the energy of a place. And many of the exercises and the techniques that they have us do, and they continually have us do, are all about finding places of silence and finding that still place within yourself. And then noticing, first, you have to sort of learn, well, you know, what is my energy body? What does it feel like? And then you repeatedly do these exercises to begin to catalog how does your energy body begin to take in the energies of the place where you are? Or how does it take in the energy of the sunrise? What happens when that changes, when the sun comes up off the horizon? How does your energy body catalog the meeting of another person? Or, you know, what happens when you're in ceremony? And they are very particular about the energies that they, and the places, the qualities of the places that they will choose to do their ceremonies. And they have these sort of three or four different words for categorizing the level of the energy of a particular place. And there's a word that means that the energy is kind of rotten. It sort of smells bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a word that says callao, which means the energy is a sort of low vibration, kind of muddy and dirty and, you know, not really a place that you would want to do anything special, certainly not healing or anything, you know, talking to a divine being. There is a level of energy which is just ordinary household daily energy, payan. And in mm-hmm. payan energy, they say, yeah, you could do ceremony in that. You know, it's not really going to help you. It might distract you a little bit. But then what they really want to look for are these places that are pristine and just have beautiful crystalline energy. And those places are called Kolana, K-O-L-L-A-N-A. And a place of Kolana energy, I'm sure you've experienced this. It can be a natural place, like on a glacier, or sometimes out on a large body of water. You can feel very calm. You can feel very supported.
Mm-hmm.
Up in the Andes, when you're at one of these sacred mountains at, you know, a very high elevation, usually above 10,000 feet, the energies there are so incredibly clean and clear that it's like very little that we have ever experienced here. You can experience it here in the Rockies, and in some places, there are sacred places everywhere, and we have them here too,
mm-hmm.
in Huntsville. But we've really experienced this just absolutely crystal clear energy that supports you for being calm and collected and really focused in ceremony. Your body will not ever forget that.
Hmm. Where are there some places in Huntsville like that, that somebody might experience this?
Absolutely. On the mountain on Manisano.
On Manisano?
Manisano is our local apu. In the Andes, the mountain spirits are the mountains are the tutelary spirits that are sort of taking care of everybody. And Manisano is our local apu. It's our yakta apu. And it's the tutelary spirit that's sort of watching over us. It's taking care of the weather. It's, you know, it's a sacred place. When I first moved here, and before I had started doing any shamanic work, I remember driving up on top of the mountain, and there was a point about halfway up Bankhead Parkway
mm-hmm.
when I thought, something just changed. I mean, I felt in my body something lift, and it felt sort of suddenly my head was clearer, and I thought, isn't that interesting? And I talked to a lot of people here who live here, and they all have experienced that same thing. Mm-hmm. Some people call it the snow line.
It's about where the lookout is.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's definitely a place where you suddenly you just feel lighter, and you feel mm-hmm. like a little clearer, a little calmer. And that is your body in the middle world adjusting to the shift in energies, the frequencies, vibrations, whatever you want to call it, in those energies. And in the middle world, it's our body that is really transducing those energies. It's the way that we catalog those things. All of that input is coming through our sensory system in some way. And I found in a lot of my studies that there are some commonalities in how that works for people. But for the most part, everybody's body, everybody's sensory system in the middle world is unique. And so it may feel to me like a tingling or a coolness. And to the next person, it might kind of feel like a buzzing, or there may be sound or sight when things happen.
The energy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever experience like a flash of light, just a a subtle flash of light when that happens?
I have actually experienced flashes. It's like, what it looks like to me is the power has gone off for just a microsecond.
Just a bleep. Yeah, just a bleep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or I'll see something out of the corner of my eye, and that's one of the visual stimuli that I get
mm-hmm.
for energies and for beings or for whoever might be around in the middle world. But the other thing that I get in my own body is I get a sense of contact in some way.
Yes.
And when I first read that word tinkwi in Quechua, and they were talking about the energy bodies touching, I thought, oh gosh, here's this group of people who have a word for that. And I was just trying to make up my own words.
Hmm.
It's a feeling that's very, very difficult to describe, isn't it?
Yes. And it's a feeling of presence,
but not physical.
No, it's almost that feeling of being stared at from behind.
That is exactly how I describe it. Like, you're in Walmart, standing in line, and you feel that creepy guy staring at you, and you turn around, and there he is.
Yes, exactly. And what the shamans and Peru and the Tapacos and the Andes would say is that is your energy body registering that someone is making a connection with you. We send out these little threads of connection, and that's how we build a relationship. We're literally building these links of light between us, these energetic links, and that touch of that, of a new thread, can be like that sensation of being stared at, and our bodies register that. I don't remember who the tribe is. I found this on the web, and I've lost it again, so I'll have to go back and look, but there's a group of people somewhere in the world who are supposedly magnificent trackers, and the way that they track their animals is through these threads of connection. They can actually see them. They can see these silvery lines, and what they say is, I may go out in the woods, and the first time I see a new bird, there's a tiny little hairline filament of energy that gets connected between us. And the more that I observe this bird, the thicker and thicker this filament may begin to be. And the more that the bird knows me, and the more that I know the bird, and when the bird's going to be there, and when they're nesting, and when they're feeding, and when they're sharpening their beak, and all that, as I see them do these things, these filaments get thicker and thicker and thicker. And finally, over time, when we know each other so well that we really know what the other is going to do, we can almost feel it in our body. They say that these filaments of connection have built up so strongly that they're almost like thick ropes. And so we literally have these two-way communication pathways built of energy between us. And that's one of the things that definitely happens here in the middle world. And this happens with people as well. I mean, I'm sure you've had the experience of thinking about someone very strongly,
mm-hmm.
and then suddenly they call you, or you see them in the grocery store, and you think, gosh, I was just thinking about you.
Yeah. And it's just not synchronicity either. It just happens.
That's, I believe it's a function of those energy filaments,
mm-hmm.
and the way that we interact and the way that we create these connections. My teacher, Betsy Bergstrom, who lives in Seattle, is one of the teachers who has taught me the most about the middle world. She is a wonderful, kind, and very powerful woman. She is thin and willowy and elegant. She was a clothing designer when she was younger, and now she's a full-time shamanic healer and teacher, and has been for many, many years. And she was also a longtime student of Michael Harner. But Betsy grew up in a very interesting household. Her father was Native American. He was Salish from the Northwest Coast. And so from him, she learned all about power animals and all about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then her grandmother, who was Irish, also lived with them. And her grandmother was a medium. So Betsy and her sisters grew up watching their grandmother and her grandmother's cronies do these sittings and talking to spirits and doing all these things. And she said, it was great fun. We'd watch through the banisters of the stairway, and then the next day we'd try it ourselves. We'd come home and, you know, do what we could do. And she said it was kind of funny, but we also got in a lot of trouble because we didn't know how to do things in the proper way and with the proper safeguards. And so she said, I learned a lot by doing things wrong.
Well, everybody does.
Well, that's what doing something wrong is. It's a lesson.
Oh, yeah. But Bessie's a teacher who really taught me that in any kind of energetic or healing work, it's really our bodies that we need to absolutely engage. Our minds and our spirits, yes, but also we're getting all this information through our bodies that we may not be recognizing. And I think that's the most wonderful gift that she ever gave me. She said, you know, just be really, really attentive to what your body is telling you. Notice what you notice, and notice how you notice it. Mm-hmm. And I've been in classes, you know, 45 people with her, 30, 40, 45 people. And even in a class that big, there will be people who have vastly different ways of processing spiritual information through their bodies. Some people have a knowing, and she calls these things the clairs. A lot of people call this kind of information the clairs. Clairsentience mm-hmm. is the way of knowing. Clairaudience, of course, is the way of hearing. Clairsmelling, I don't remember what that one is. Whatever that would be. Smelling.
I had it there too, but
clairolfactory, is that it?
Yeah.
It could
something
be.
Something similar to that.
Clairsentience, where you actually feel things in your body. Some people can look at a person or make a connection with a person, and they have a pain in their body where the other person has a pain. And so there's sort of this mirroring going on.
Like mm-hmm. an empathy.
Yes, mm-hmm, exactly. So the clairs, you know, she really has encouraged us to say, well, what if there are other clairs? What if there are clairs that we don't know about yet? And in the first class that I ever took with her, I was taking Compassionate Depossession 1 and 2. She is she's a Buddhist, and so her approach to how do you help a being who is stuck here in the middle world, how do you help them go to a good place? She approaches this with deep compassion. And rather than, you know, just sort of ripping this being out of the energy field of another person and lobbing it toward the light, she really considers that there are two clients sitting in front of her. One is the being who's stuck here, and one is the person who has this being stuck in their energy field. And so it was a completely different way for me of understanding shamanic work, number one, which is a bit of a world game changer anyway. And so I was in this class, I was beginning to understand that your body really tells you a lot of information. And the simplest way that we can know this is, I'm sure you've had the experience of walking into a room where there's just been an argument or a fight, and you can just feel the tension. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's so thick. And I'm sure you've also had the experience of going to a place, wherever that might be, and suddenly you just feel so happy. Or maybe you're in a crowd and everybody's singing and happy, and you know, you get entrained in this big energy field of happiness and joy. And so that describes a little bit of a feature of these energy fields and how they interact with our body, is that we can be entrained in them. Mm-hmm. They can kind of pull us around a little bit, in good ways and not so good ways. Well, in this class that I was sitting in, it was an 8 or 9 day residential. So it was a really long class, and we were in the second half of this, and it was a big class. People came from all over the world. There were three people from Australia, several from Canada, Geneva, Switzerland, England. People from all over were coming to this class, and one little boy from Alabama, which I thought was funny.
And here we are.
I thought I was going to be the one traveling the farthest, but I was not by a long shot. And so one of the ways that she teaches is she she lectures, but she also does demonstrations so that you can feel these things in your body. And there was a person who, when you start talking about these phenomena, especially if there's a suffering being involved, if there's a captive spirit, sometimes they wake up a little bit and they start to activate. And so there were a couple of people who were activated, and she plopped them down in the middle of the room, and she made a little inner circle and then a big outer circle. I think for this class there were about 40 of us. And I was in the outer circle, and so she began this beautiful process of sort of connecting with this being and asking, you know, who are you and what kind of being are you? And then she calls in the great beings of compassion, the psychopomp beings, to help move a trapped spirit to the place where it's really the best place for them to be. And the process begins. And while the process is beginning, she's also asking angelic beings to pour divine light into the heart of a being who's stuck so that they can really become themselves. Because for many trapped spirits, they've been trapped here in the middle world for so long, they forget who they are, and they kind of go into sort of standby mode, sort of shutdown mode, and they get a little kind of sleepy, and they, you know, may not quite understand what's really happening. But when you start bringing that divine light in, and they start remembering who they are, they can really become transcendent, really in a beautiful, beautiful way. And so this was happening, and it was kind of late at night. I think this demo was around, we started at about 8, maybe, and we were going to finish at 10 that night. So it was about 9, and it was maybe the 6th or 7th day of this training. I was really tired, and I started hearing music in my head. And at first I thought, oh, man, you know, I had a lot of coffee. And I just, you know, I thought my brain was really running, and I thought, oh, no, I'm never going to be able to get to sleep tonight. And then I thought, well, maybe somebody's broadcasting. Because when you're in a group like that and you've all worked together very closely and you've yeah. really opened up, your faculties can be augmented. And so I thought, oh, no, somebody's broadcasting and I can't make them stop. So I kept looking around to see who I thought it might be, but I didn't see anybody. And then I noticed that all of the music that was running through my head came from a very specific time period. It was all from sort of the late 1600s to maybe the early 1700s. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. And then the more that I started listening to these little snippets of song that were running through my head, I heard, I think, a French aria from a French cantata about Orpheus in the underworld, and finally coming out with Eurydice up into the light. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? That's kind of the same as the thing that we're doing here, is, you know, sort of liberating this spirit. And the next song was from a Monteverdi, famous Monteverdi piece, and there's a very slow section in the middle, and the words are, but I walk through this dark place for so long, and I'm alone, and I don't know whether to weep or to sing. And then I think the next song has something again to do about really coming out into the light and coming, you know, it's all very joyful, amazing music. And I kept thinking, gosh, this is all from about the same time period, and it's all the same kind of idea. Maybe it's just my mind focusing on this depossession process and thinking about it in that way. I thought, how weird is that? And when the process was all done, we have a little bit of a confab, and she said, so, did anybody notice anything? And I kept my hand down because I thought, she'll think I'm crazy if I say that. But then several people said a few things, and finally, she said, well, it appears that this spirit was bound into this family line about 400 years ago, and it was bound with music. Hmm. As part of the curse that was cast to bind the spirit into the family line. And so I immediately lifted my hand up and said, let me tell you what I heard. And so I just said, this was running through my head the whole time that this was happening. So from that, I began to understand that musical references are one way that I can get information about a situation. And that was I've never heard of that from other people. I have now, but at the time I had not. And so I thought, isn't that interesting? So that's a middle world faculty that I did not even know I had, that just sort of burst almost fully formed on me one day. And if I hadn't really been paying attention, I would have ignored that kind of information as being irrelevant when it was very, very relevant.
Well, so, I think something like that probably could help us in investigations, I would think.
Yeah.
Mm. Yep.
Most, I mean, absolutely.
I had a funny thing happen. I was teaching a beginning shamanic course a couple years ago, and one of the students was having a lot of trouble connecting with the helping spirits. You know, she would try to go to the lower world and not see anybody or not see anything. And I kept asking her, so is anything else happening? Is there any other thing that you're noticing? Because what I find is that oftentimes we're discounting this information that's coming in. And she said, well, I keep hearing this song. And I said, well, what's the song? And she said, she kind of rolled her eyes and she said, it's the girl from Ipanema.
Girl
and I said,
from where?
Hmm. And I, you know, I did da 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 da. But I didn't really know the words, so immediately I whipped out my phone and I started looking at the words. And there's a stanza in that song that says, she walks right by us, she doesn't see us.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, that's what the relevant part of that song is. And so I said, well, here's what the song says. So perhaps we can, you know, try to help you see some things in a little bit different way.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, you know, sometimes you get songs like that in your head, and you're not really paying attention to the message.
Right.
It mm-hmm. can be so subtle.
Yeah.
Very, very subtle. And that's, you know, the lesson that this teacher and my teacher in the Andes also says is you have to really be careful, and you have to really notice these little things. But also, Tito Condori is my teacher in the Andes, and one of the things that we do in that tradition is a lot of just silent meditation, just yes. really trying to get things quiet. And he and many, many other teachers in almost every tradition will say, the spirits can only reach you when you're really, really quiet. And I find that some of my most powerful healing journeys have been of that kind, when there's something that's really small that I almost overlook, and it's actually the seed of the entire healing process. And if I had been less quiet or less studious, then I really would have tripped over it and just missed it. And I'm sure that's happened a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. How does someone, I know I meditate whenever I can, but and I know so many of my friends do, but how does someone quiet their monkey mind?
Well, that's a good question.
For those that have problems with meditation, because I know so many people say, you know, I just can't get the, you know, it just keeps running. I can't get quiet. I, you know, or else it, they get go the opposite way and they fall asleep.
Mm.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know.
Well, the thing that I've learned from my teacher from Peru is that nature energies can really help with that. In Quechua and in that system, there is a word called hucha, that describes a quality of energy that humans create. And the closest that I can come to match what that might be in other traditions is stagnant qi, like in a traditional Chinese medicine system, where you have qi that's all blocked up, or mm-hmm. it's qi that has these external influences kind of in it. And what they say about hucha is a dense energy that our bodies cannot handle or process. And they also say that hucha is the beginning of all disease. And that sounds a lot like stagnant or, you know, qi that's just not mm-hmm. flowing right, not mm-hmm. not you know turning into the right kind of chi. And there's also another kind of chi called sami, and which is like vibrant golden chi that you get when you do qigong outside. And so what we do in that tradition is we go out onto the land, onto the earth, the ground, wherever you are, and you sweetly ask the Pachamama, which is the earth mother, mm-hmm. To take the hucha from our body. And you can sit there for, some people sit there for, you know, 10, 15 minutes. Some people do it for longer. I was taught 45 minutes or so is a really good start.
Yes.
And what happens is when a hucha, you can also visualize it sort of going into the earth. And my teacher says, don't think about it like you're polluting the earth, because you're really not. This is an energy that the Pachamama can beautifully eat and metabolize. And it's like when we breathe out carbon dioxide, the trees can breathe that in, and the trees give us back oxygen. So it's that kind of exchange, it's that kind of
relationship.
Spiritual exchange. Yes. So it's our job as humans to get rid of our hucha. And the hucha is the thing that keeps our monkey mind running. This is in the Quechua, the system that they talk about in the Andes. And what I find is when I really do that on a regular basis, it gets easier and easier and easier to find that place of stillness, that place of quietness. But that nature is really a necessary part of that, being out in nature. Mm-hmm. And since these bodies, every molecule in our body comes directly from the Pachamama, directly from the Earth Mother, you know, through the food that we eat, through the air that we breathe, and the water that we drink, that we are literally made from, she made us, we're made from the Pachamama. And she's got the perfect energetic blueprint for our vibrant health. And so being out, you know, for weeks at a time in Peru, you know, sitting out every day in this beautiful, pristine energy will really clear the hucha light out. And even here, up on Montesano, I was going to say earlier, like the springs, Sagan Springs, mm-hmm. and also Cold Spring is a beautiful place of absolutely beautiful energy coming right out of the earth. Takes a little bit of a walk to get there. Cold Spring is easier to get to. You can get to it from Bankhead Parkway. But Sagan Spring takes a little bit of tromping. But those places where this just beautiful energy is coming out of the earth, or up on the lookout is another great place, mm-hmm. where you're exposed to the sky and to the sun. Wonderful places with stone underneath you, you know, just asking the Pachamama to take that hucha away. Mm. And one interesting thing that my teacher says about hucha is she says it's necessary to really do this, do a big hucha clearing ceremony about once every 10 days. And they looked at us and they said, but if you work with clients or if you work with technology, you need to do this much, much more often. Because he said these other energies are sort of jangling up your body energy.
Okay.
And it makes it easier for your body to begin storing hucha. So that's one answer, is really being physically in contact with the earth while you're meditating can make a huge difference, big difference.
Well, Jeffrey, we have our first caller before we go to our first break. Do you have time for a caller?
Sure, you bet.
Well, hello, caller. You're on The Buzz with Kevin, Molly, and Jeff.
Hello, Kevin, Molly, and Jeff. This is Veronica.
Hi,
yeah. Hey, Veronique.
Hey, Molly. I have a question for you, Jeff.
Okay.
I was wondering what is the difference, if there is a difference between the way you practice the shamanic traditions from, evidently, Peru, I think, I understand, and the Native American.
Oh, well, that's a great question. And honestly, I don't know. I have not been trained in any North American, Native American techniques. I don't have any North American, Native American teachers. So I can only take some guesses here. But I know that the language that I hear in some of the writings that I've read from North American Native teachers, talking about the Earth Mother, talking about the Sky Father, the Sun, the Moon. It's very, very similar to the things that the Quechua healers say, and it's also very, very similar to, for instance, the Polynesian healers, the way that they talk about the volcanoes and talk about the big waters. Mm-hmm. So my guess here is that there is an underlying similarity that ties many of these traditions together, and that these teachings really come directly from the spirits and from the earth and from the moon and the sun themselves. And so they're open for anyone to learn them. And I think that many, many traditions have stumbled upon the same kinds of things over the years and have their own versions of these very similar teachings, with their own variations, of course.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. I guess I'll have to kind of take it out myself, but I do appreciate you taking the time and answering my question. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Sure.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thanks for coming.
Bye-bye. We'll see you soon.
Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye. Well, how about this, guys? How about we take our first news break, and then when we come back, I have a couple questions I'd like to ask.
Sure.
Okay, you bet.
Awesome. Well, everybody, just stick with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Okay, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. So mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole or you have to start all over. Socks go in first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops, the rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But 2 minutes twice a day, making sure they brush their teeth, is easier, and it could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. Visit 2min2x.org to find out more. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
Radio, I'm Jane Metzler. Another day of heavy rain in South Carolina. At least a dozen weather-related deaths in that state.
We've seen more than 100 swift boat rescues in the past 24 hours and 25 helicopter rescues.
Fox's Steve Harrigan in Columbia. We're told the rain has finally stopped. Widespread power outages still reported, and tap water is unsafe to drink. Today, students and staff allowed back on the campus of Umpqua Community College in Oregon, the scene of last Thursday's deadly shooting rampage. Fox Radio's Jessica Rosenthal has the latest live.
And Jane, the campus was open to a few people who need to get belongings they may have left on campus as they fled. Snyder Hall, where the shooting happened, though, may remained closed for weeks. More parents of students are speaking out about what happened. Pastor Randy Scroggin says his daughter Lacey told him she heard a bang and one of the victim's bodies fell on top of her.
And then, Daddy, I felt something so warm. And I looked down and Trevin's blood was coming under my arm.
The mother of another student says the shooter handed him an envelope with what felt like a flash drive inside and told him to give it to police, Jane.
Thanks, Jessica. Seven people hurt, one seriously, when an Amtrak train derailed today in Vermont. Fox Radio's Grinnell Scott with a live update.
Jane, the train was starting a 14-hour trip to Washington, D.C. before hitting rocks from a ledge that broke away and fell on the rails. This passenger described the moments before the train left the track.
We felt something like a bump. And next thing we knew, there was like, we kind of swerved to the left and then swerved to the right, and we all going, uh-oh. And pretty soon it just stopped.
Five cars derailed, two of them going down an embankment. Vermont's governor, Peter Shumlin, called it a freak of nature with no apparent sign of neglect, Jane.
Thanks, Grinnell. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Real experience, real insight.
We're following this explosive story.
Nothing gets by Greta.
then.
This is all BS. What was that all about?
There's no spin and no question. O'Reilly dominates. Plus, smart, sharp, and cutting edge.
It's the news of the day, but with a little heat.
Megan delivers, and Sean seals the deal with fearless talk.
What part of that aren't you understanding?
Most watched, most trusted, Fox News Channel.
There's more to Fox News Radio than meets the ear. Go behind the headlines and join the conversation on the hottest stories of the day on the Fox News Radio Facebook page. Be a part of the Fox News Radio Facebook fan community. Post comments and tell us your opinions. See behind-the-scenes photos and videos and post your reactions to the stories that matter to you. Click the like button on Facebook and connect with breaking news and features like Fox in the Fast Lane, House Call for Help, and more. Go to Facebook.com/Fox News Radio.
In-flight fatality.
Medical emergency. Captain is incapacitated. Request handling for runway 10 landing.
American 550, Syracuse approach, roger.
The pilot of an American Airlines flight en route from Boston to Phoenix died during that flight. The co-pilot forced to land the plane in Syracuse, New York. 150 passengers on board the plane.
We were all shocked and like, wow, didn't know him, but put our life in his hands, and now he's gone.
They like put tarps up so we couldn't see anything out the windows. You know, the cops evacuated everybody away from the windows, and then when we got on our flight here, 4 hours later, they notified us that he passed away.
No word on the official cause of death. The U.S. determined to find out just how it happened, that deadly hospital bombing in Afghanistan.
The White House is confirming that there will be three separate investigations into how and why an Afghan hospital was bombarded by U.S. fighter jets on Saturday, killing 12 staffers from Doctors Without Borders and at least 10 patients, including three children. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the U.S. takes many precautions to avoid civilian casualties.
There is no country in the world and no military in the world that goes to greater lengths and places a higher premium on avoiding civilian casualties than the United States Department of Defense.
Doctors Without Borders has called the airstrike a war crime and has demanded an independent investigation.
Fox Radio's John Decker. He once studied for the priesthood and acknowledges the Catholic Church considers it a sin. But California Governor Jerry Brown has signed a right to die bill into law. And the rally continues on Wall Street. The Dow up 304 points. The Nasdaq gaining 73. The S&P 500 up 36 points today. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
Everybody, we are back. You are listening to The Buzz on ztalkradio.com. And if you're just now joining us, we are being joined by Jeffrey Rich, a 21st century shamanic practitioner. And if I can kind of jump in here a little bit, we were talking off air about the spiritual beauty of mountain places. And, you know, like Molly was talking about Arizona, I myself am from Arizona, and we really miss those mountains or the high places. And I'm using that term purposely. And you were talking about the Smokies.
Yeah.
You know, all throughout history, people of spiritual education or shaman or practitioners of all sorts have always chosen mountain places in with which to practice. For example, Buddha went up into a mountain, up into a cave, and studied there and reached enlightenment there. Jesus oftentimes went to high places, would go up on top of a mountain to preach or to be close to God. Is there a connection between the energies and, like you said early in the show, choosing a place with good energy, with mountaintops?
Absolutely. My teacher, Betsy Bergstrom, whom I've spoken of earlier, I told her about this experience I had about going on top of Monte Sano. And, you know, suddenly my mind gets clear. And she asked a lot of questions about what Huntsville was like. And I said, well, it's a big aerospace town. And as far as I know, we have more aerospace PhDs here than anybody, any place else on Earth. Mm-hmm. And she said, And she said, well, think of it this way. You have a very dense field of mental thought. And so some of these kinds of fields really drop off over distance. So when you go up to a high place and to a remote place, I think remote is really part of the equation, remote and pristine, you're going to a place where you're farther away from other thinking human beings. So you're in a place that's very wild. The energy there is Koyana, which means it's very, very high frequency, pristine, beautiful. And I would think that the Himalayas would be exactly the same that they would be in the Andes, you know, very beautiful, wonderful. And also in places in the Smokies, too. If you can find a place that's relatively far away from other people, you can have exactly that same experience. Even places up on Monte Sano, you can have that experience. Just like a mountain kind of envelop you a little bit. And it's really getting away from these other fields of energy that can confuse us a little bit, kind of interact with our own and bring us off track a little bit. So, Kevin, does that answer your question?
Oh, absolutely, because it goes to prove a point, and I'm so glad that you answered it in the way that you did by saying remote. Again, if you don't mind me blathering for just a moment. Moses left Egypt and wandered out into the desert. He was remote. He was in a high place whenever he had the vision of the burning bush. All the Old Testament prophets were always remote. They went away from the cities. So from what you just described, they were in a place to where they were not influenced with any other type of energy, so they would have a pure connection with God or higher consciousness, whatever term you want to make it. Am I making sense, or am I on the right track?
Yes, absolutely. And the thing that I am finding as I go further in my own studies, when you do these practices that connect you with the earth and that start refining your own energies and your energy centers, then you become much more sensitive to the jangling energies of other people and groups of people. And it just makes you really want to be away. Because it's, in some ways, harder to... there are techniques that you can filter that out, but it's still difficult to, because, you know, you're it's like you've suddenly tuned your receiver to a very fine level, and you can hear for a long, long way. And so it, just being in a place where there aren't any people makes it easier to find the quietness within yourself.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you just, you know, that's why we say sometimes you just have to get away.
Absolutely, yeah.
I work in a jail.
Oh, no. Okay.
So you're surrounded, well, you know exactly where I work, right downtown on Wheeler. I forget you're right here with us.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're so surrounded by negative energy, or you're having problems with your coworkers. But yesterday, I just got away from it all. I was home by myself. I went to the gym by myself and had the most spectacular day. And I really felt centered. I really felt connected and enjoyed some time with God. And you're right. You just got to get away from those influences.
Yeah.
And you and they have bad influences.
What's that?
And I said, and he's around some bad influences.
Oh, God.
Well, I'm sorry to cut you off.
There are a certain number of sort of middle world energetic clearing methods that you could use, but I don't know of anything that could... if you have a large group of people who have one way of thinking, I'm not sure that one person doing clearing would really be able to stem that tide. So, yeah, it would be a difficult place to be.
Yeah, that's why That's why I just come home and, you know, on the drive home, I'm just, you know, it's me and my trance music or Glenn Beck, and I just let it all go, because if you bring it home, you're just going to spread it.
Yeah. Up until last year, my massage practice, and also the room where I was doing some of my shamanic healing, was located inside the Clearview Cancer Institute.
Oh, wow.
Which is up on Russell Hill, and we were on the second floor, and so we had people all around us. And that's a very busy facility, a very wonderful facility, great people, beautiful staff. But there are also just a very large number of people who are really, really worried about their health, or they're really, really worried about their family. Of course, who wouldn't be? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of just the energy of worry and the energy of anxiety was very, very strong there. And I know some really good clearing techniques, but my techniques were not equal to the task of keeping my space perfectly clear. I had to work really hard at it. And there were days when it was just really, really tough, you know? And, yeah, it's almost as if when you leave the building, you can feel the pressure. It's like you step into a lower pressure, almost.
Have you moved your office now? Or?
I have. I'm in Five Points now. In a little building on Russell Street, and I love it. It's really great. I'm surrounded on three sides by air, which is nice. And I have a wonderful neighbor to the south in a suite whom I've known forever from days when I did software at Circe years ago.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it's great. I love it.
Well, I was going to ask you, early on in the interview, you were talking about being intuitive and combining that with your education and your shamanic practices. When you are working on a person as a masseuse, Are you combining your energy with theirs, and how do you protect yourself?
Well, that is a great question. Let's see. First, I am working with the helping spirits whenever I do a massage as a massage therapist, and my office is, I regularly clear it. I'm regularly opening sacred space there and inviting in the angelic beings and other compassionate spirits. And I work with the Pachamama and I work with the Apus. And I ask them, I say, please just help me not take on the hutra of my client. And as a Reiki practitioner also, you know, I know that I am able, I'm attuned to those energies of universal life force. So I'm really trying to keep my energies, my focus and my intention that I am operating at the universal energy level. And in that way, it's almost as if I just sort of step aside and the energies of my clients don't always affect me. Sometimes they do. And that when they affect me is when I have a very strong affinity in my own body or in my own emotional system with something that the client's going through. And then I become resonant. And when I become resonant with my client, then there is a little bit more exchange of our personal energies, even when I don't want it to happen. And so really doing the work to learn what those affinities are and doing practices to help let go of them is what can help detach and really make yourself unavailable to those energies. It's not that you're blocking them. It's just that you're literally stepping away from that frequency completely. And so it's like you're tuned to a different channel, you can't hear it. And that's the easy version. It's a little bit harder in practice, but that's really what I try to do.
Well, what all do you pick up from a client?
Well, it's funny that you ask that. This work that I've just finished, this training I've just finished, with the teacher from Washington when she was flying up to Baltimore, is all about family constellations. And constellation work is about reading the field, the information field, the knowing field is what a lot of people call it, about a family system. And what I was finding is that I had a client experience several years ago that was really shocking to me. And this was really before I was doing shamanic work. And he was a good client of a man who was working in the Army. And I knew that he was a really higher up in the Army. And so I try not to bring the crystals and the feathers out for those kind of people. I try to be kind of low-key, you know. And I have an engineering background, so I can pretend to be one or the other. And, just play it cool. And this man walked into my office, and I had a phrase that was just wanting to leap out of my mouth at him. And I literally physically clamped my jaw shut, and I thought, I am not going to say that to him, because he's going to think I'm crazy. And throughout the whole massage, there were moments when it was almost as if I couldn't help myself, and I had to literally bite my tongue, forcibly keep my mouth shut, even to the point where when he left me, and I didn't know anything about this man. He had been coming to me. We had never exchanged any information about personal lives. I just knew he worked for the Army, that was it. But this man had this message that was not going to let go. And so even when I shook his hand at the end of the massage, it was all I could do to not blurt something else. And so he left. And then that night, I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking about this message. And finally, at about 3 o'clock, I got up and I emailed him and said, okay, I'm a massage therapist. I know you're going to think I'm a flake, but here you go. Got this message for you. And it didn't. I said, this doesn't make any sense to me, but it might make some sense to you. If it doesn't, just ignore it, and just chalk it up to being flaky. And then I didn't hear from him the next day, and I thought, oh boy, I lost client. But the second day, he emailed me back, and he said, how did you know? And emailed him back and said, I didn't know. I said, this was just something that leapt to mind when you walked in the door. Literally, when our energy fields touched, I had this information in my head. And I said, I didn't know what it meant, but I knew that it was really important that you hear it, and the spirits would not let me sleep until I gave the information. So sometimes it happens like that. I had a funny experience with a client even before she got to the office. This was a few months ago. I got up, and this is a regular. She comes, once a week, and we've done a lot of massages together, so we've created a lot of threads of connection. And this morning, I was just stomping mad. I was stomping around the apartment, slamming doors, and just seething. And I kept thinking, what am I mad about? I wasn't mad about anything that I could even think of. And I thought, So I thought, maybe this isn't me. And I kind of let it go. And generally, when I finally figure those things out, I just tell the spirit, thank you very much for the information. You can let that go. duly noted, thank you.
And so lesson learned.
So she walked in, and she was very calm, but she started talking about something that had happened. And I said to her, I said, were you mad earlier this morning? And she looked at me, and she just let out. She said, yes, I was stomping mad. I was stomping around the house.
And so were you.
And I just laughed, and I said, were you thinking about me when you were mad? She says, yes, I was so mad at so-and-so because they were going to keep me from having my massage with you. And so I laughed, and I told her my story, and I said, okay, well, it seems like I was picking up on you earlier in the morning. And I said, maybe next time you're mad you couldn't think of me, maybe you would think of somebody else or think of something else. Because that seems to have opened up a little corridor of communication there.
Well, that goes.
When I do massage, when I'm doing massage, I don't try to read people. At best, I will try to get an indication of if there is pain or if there is a pain syndrome. My hands generally know where to go, or sometimes I will get information about what that could be about. And there have been a couple of times when a client will describe classic symptoms of something, and I'll think, that's not it, and it has not been it. It's been something else. But I refrain from trying to read people unless they really give me permission, because I think that that's a little bit of voyeurism, and I try to not do that.
Mm-hmm. But that does lend to another thing that we were talking about off the air during the news break is that you said pretty much the same thing, just in different words, that several of our previous guests have said. For example, Ernesto Ortiz comes immediately to mind, that we are all connected.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, we all share this common bond. There's this energy, you know, that binds us all. And we were talking about how people are bound to their bodies by a silver thread. And you were feeling her emotions. You were feeling her anger, her frustration, and you were exhibiting it. Can you ever trace that thread back to see who it is that you're in touch with at the time?
Sometimes. I have learned now, whenever that happens, when I'm experiencing something that just seems completely out of left field, I will just ask the questions of my body. I'll say, is this mine? Or is this not mine? And if it's not mine, I ask the question, does this belong to somebody else? And frequently when I ask that question and it does belong to someone else, their image or their face will pop up, or the field will give me an indication of who it is a little bit later on. You know, I'll see something that reminds me of someone and I was like, oh, okay, it's that person. In the constellation training that I just took, we talked a lot about this knowing field. And every system has a field of information, has a field of knowledge about it. And if you think of the family, you know, your family, my family, is an ancient, ancient system. I mean, we've been going for millennia, probably. And so there's a lot of information in my family system. And if you think about our deep ancestry, we're all connected deeply at some level. So, you know, my soul is part of the family soul. My family soul is part of humanity's family soul as well. So we're connected in that way. But I really do believe that at the deepest level, we are all connected all the time. In much more profound ways that we can't yet quite understand. And many physicians say that we're all one, and I will believe that.
I loved when you spoke to the Paranormal Study Center, the exercise that you did where you had us all kind of go from feeling of our ancestors to we were in lines, and we had to move into different spaces of where...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From our past to our present, and the different feelings that we got.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That is awesome.
That's a classic, that's a, what I call a constructionist constellation. You can set up areas of the room that are, you know, one generation back, two generations back, three, four, five, six, seven, however many. And then you can go stand in those fields, literally. What is it like to stand in the field of my great-grandparents? What is it like to stand in the field of my great-great-grandparents? And so on. And you can experience a little bit of in your body, of in a very mediumistic way, of, you know, what that's like and who they were and, you know, what were the challenges? Was it a joyful time? Was it a difficult time? And, that's a very powerful constellation.
Yeah, because, I mean, who would have thought that you could do that, you know, to that being in just a different space would make that much difference?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was wonderful.
The constellation work is a totally middle world technique. So you're literally stepping into sometimes, or the facilitator is oftentimes reading this field, looking at a constellation and seeing what's happened, and then sometimes getting information that there's something missing or something needs to be introduced or something needs to be said.
Mm-hmm.
And the field, the knowing field, will often talk to us in very specific ways. And that's that field is what many people are accessing when they will do a nature walk, when they're asking a question. And then, for instance, you can go up on Monte Sano, and if you have a conundrum, something you really can't work out, to say, show me something, you know, give me an answer here. And you sort of turn that question over to either the knowing field or the nature spirits. And as you go on a walk in very slow meditation, you're connected with the field that's going to give you that answer. Your vision may be drawn to something very specific, like one specific acorn, or one of the times I did this, it was a tree with two branches, and I just couldn't tear my eyes away from these two branches. And they were very parallel. And so the answer eventually bubbled up into my brain later that, oh, you know, those could be parallel tracks of a career. Or I don't remember what my question was, but it was later when I finally figured out, I'm like, oh, that was really good.
Yeah. And I like the exercise that you did. I think we were talking about the Trail of Tears that weekend.
Yeah.
And those of us that felt like we had Indian ancestry and how we felt during that time and how the other side felt that weren't of Indian heritage and how we were really united.
Yes, and that's a constellation that is based on a constellation by a Dutch man named Dan van Kampenhout, and he does a lot of work with Holocaust survivors in Europe.
Oh boy. Mm-hmm.
And it's a constellation that he had done about inclusion and exclusion in, you know, modern society based on what had happened to your family. And he hypothesized that when there's a group of people, like so many of those groups were the Jews, homosexuals, Romans, who were put in the camps and who were executed, you know, the German psyche, the German people as a large soul experienced soul loss by excluding this group of people. So the constellation was one way of sort of helping see that soul loss and helping actually experience it in the body in modern times. And when the two groups come together, there's actually a uniting again of these pieces of the soul, which, you know, it's not personal soul loss as much as the soul loss of an entire people. And it was, and what was your experience in that constellation?
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel when you were in that constellation?
Myself?
Yes.
I felt like I was when the Indians, the American Indians that had been displaced, you know, and driven out on the Trail of Tears, and then the other side, I think they were the people that were driving. I don't remember exactly how that was set up, but I think they were part of the ones that were driving us out. And but there was empathy there, and you know, we all hugged afterwards. We felt that bond.
Yes. And what the constellation facilitators worldwide will say about those kinds of events is it doesn't matter which side your family was on, mm-hmm. When the event took place, that the guilt and the shame falls evenly on both the perpetrators and the victims through time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so doing these constellations is a really wonderful way of really just saying, you know, I acknowledge that you're a part of me, and I acknowledge that we are one. And that puts that information back into the field. The field really wants that. And for me, the Trail of Tears work came out of actually some information that the field gave to me, the Middle World. I discovered that one of my ancestors was a translator for Andrew Jackson during the Indian removals. And interestingly enough, I used to live in Fayetteville, very close to one of the land trails, and at the same time I was also working on Highway 72 on one of the other land trails. Mm-hmm. I was living on one and working on the other, and I've been in this area for a very long time now. And, you know, I'm beginning to really feel the imprints that are still here from those events. And in America, we're so young that we really haven't begun to start to lift those imprints out of the land yet. You know, they're still pretty buried. We don't talk about it too much. It's kind of glossed over in history lessons, but it's still there. I mean, the effects of these things and the guilt and the shame that we all bear, no matter where we stood back in the 1830s and the 1860s, it's hitting us today because it's part of our families, you know? And it's part of the land that we live on, and we feel those imprints. We can't help but be soaked in those imprints every day. So I think it's important, you know, part of my work is to help find ways to really lift those out. And if there are any suffering beings who are still stuck here, still experiencing those events, then to really help them cross in a good way, in whatever way that might be.
So let's go back, because you said something that the guilt and the shame evenly is spread amongst the victims and the perpetrators over time. Is that simply some type of a, for lack, you know, pardon my ignorance, but cosmic balance? Because that's a pretty strong statement.
You know, I really don't know. All I know about that is that when modern constellation practitioners are doing these big constellations like this, or when they bump up against these kinds of historic events, that's just merely what they're seeing in the constellations. And so a lot of times the fields and the things that we see in the family systems, they don't conform to what we might think would be the logical way that things would be handled energetically or spiritually. And this is one of those sort of illogical things. But what they are finding time and time and time again, especially with this work in Germany and in Holland and France and all over Europe, is that no matter, you know, if your family, like if your grandfather was in the Nazi party, or if your grandfather was one of the Jewish people who was exterminated in the camp, that those feelings, it's like they're mirror feelings. You know, there's shame, there's guilt. It just shows up, and that's all I can say is it's something that has been observed, and they don't know what a causality is, and we're not sure if we ever could find a causality. But it's just something that's been observed. And since it is there and we see it over and over again, then we have to kind of pay attention to it.
I can see that. It's, you know, for some reason, I don't know how to explain it, but I do understand it.
Well, it does make a sort of deep sense, you know, it makes a very deep, deep truth. Because, like you say, if we're all one, then we have both been the ones to shun, and we have both been the one to be shunned at that sort of cosmic unity place. So, yeah, it's one of those things that just doesn't make a lot of logical sense, but there it is.
Yeah, if I can get Star Trekian for just a moment, the spear in your brother's heart is the spear in your own.
Yes, exactly. Precisely.
You know, one of our listeners says, you know, because of eons of incarnation that we've all played those roles, so therefore we feel where we, you know, that we've been part of it.
Yes, the Buddhists say that everybody has been your mother, and you have been everyone's mother in some life. So yeah, we're just sort of repeating and repeating and repeating until we get it right.
And I still have my mother's thighs. So
mother's thighs. Good Lord. Mother's thighs. You'll have to excuse him, Jeffrey. Not right.
Oh my goodness. Well, we got just a few minutes left, Jeff. How would somebody get in touch with you? I definitely plan on it.
Okay, well, I am on the web at, if you Google the Shining Mountain Healing Center, the website is www.shining, Fox-Mountain.com. And I tend to answer email before I answer the phone. I'm sort of phone phobic since I was a software developer and was at the end of a support line for years and years. But my email address is jeffrey.rich@gmail.com. And I have another website, which was the first one that I started with, and it's still active. It's waterwillowmoon.com. And that has a lot more information about my shamanic work than the Shining Mountain does. But you can contact me either way from those. At the shiningmountain.com site, there's a menu of services with prices, and you can book online a session, or you can just contact me or read and, you know, see what you think.
Tell them about your drumming circles also that you have.
Can you say that louder?
Your drumming circles?
I do.
Do you drumming?
I run a drumming circle for people who have done shamanic work. It's not just an open drumming circle.
Okay.
But every now and then I'll open it up to do some constellations. And I'm doing a constellation workshop, a family constellation workshop, on Saturday, November the 7th from 9 to 5.
Okay.
And that's open to everybody, and it's just a suggested donation, so I'm not even charging a fixed fee. Suggested donation of $25. If you have it, great. If you don't, come anyway. And so we'll be looking at issues in the family and via constellations. So it'll be my very first workshop after finishing this 7-month training, and with luck, I'll actually be able to do it.
And is there a minimum number, I mean, a maximum number of people that you will
Space is limited. I think I can accommodate about 17 to 20 people. So it'll be medium, big, but cozy.
Okay.
And you don't have to bring your whole family. You can just show up. And the way that constellations work is that we all come together in service to our own families, and also in service to everybody's family. And we do the constellations with whoever shows up.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, whatever family issues you might have, it might just be something simple as, I have insomnia. And we can figure out if there's a systemic component to that. Sometimes there's a family system pressure that comes from somewhere that can inform pain or things that happen to us over and over again, or difficulty. And we can look at that in a constellation way, and sometimes you can find a lot of relief from that.
Okay, well, it sounds great. I'm maybe getting me on your list there.
And, okay, cool.
And one more time, Jeffrey, where are these circles at?
My shop is, the official address is 900... Wellman Avenue, and the actual office opens onto Russell Street. There's a little building connected to that address that actually extends along Russell Street. So I'm at the end that's closest to Clinton. We're one block away from Thai Garden, one block from 1892 restaurant. There used to be a barber shop, Wes's Barber Shop. If you know where Ekankar is in Huntsville, I'm in that exact same building, and I'm on the southernmost, is that right? South? Yes. Southernmost end of the building.
Okay.
At 900 Wellman Avenue. It's corner of Wellman and Russell.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, and there's another coincidence that's not coincidence. You're a shamanic healer, and the name of your street is Wellman.
Exactly. Isn't that funny? That's one of the reasons I rented it.
Really?
Yeah.
And don't tell us your middle name's Russell.
No.
No.
I was going to say that would just be too coincidental.
No, actually, my middle name is Jeffrey. My first name is Robert, which is my great-grandmother's family name. So.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. For the past 2 hours, I've been calling you by the wrong name. How embarrassing.
Oh, that's okay. I don't worry about it.
Oh, goodness. Well, we have, unfortunately, we have run out of time. Should I call you Robert now?
No, call me Jeffrey.
Okay.
We all know him as Jeffrey. So.
Yeah, Jeffrey's the name I go by.
Yeah.
But you...
Well, I'm so glad you joined us
me
tonight.
Too.
I'm so looking forward to this show.
Well, thank you. It's been wonderful just to be able to blab for almost 2 hours about things that I really love. So thank you for just letting me talk.
Oh, you well,
I am honored.
Now everybody knows what you do, and probably you'll get a big influx of new people.
Well, shoot, I'm coming to see you. I am coming to see you.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. I would love to meet you. We've never met in person. I've met Molly.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
I've never met you, Kevin.
I'm always the guy in the back lurking in the shadows.
Okay.
But no, I am so glad that I've...
I'm playing my little violin for him here.
I'm just glad to have met you. You know, as I've plugged into your energy during the show, I mean, you've got an absolutely beautiful soul.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
I mean,
I've worked hard on that in this lifetime.
And it shows. But thank you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Jeffrey.
Thank you. It's really been my pleasure. And I'm honored to be asked. Thank you.
And keep up your wonderful work.
I will do. It's, you know, it's really dear to my soul, and I can't really think of doing anything else. So it's a strange profession, but it's all, you know, it's really what's at the center. So.
Well, matters.
Yeah. Well, it's very necessary. With the way that the world is going right now, you know, God is placing people like you in our paths to kind of keep us straight, keep us sane. And like you said, you know, there's an awakening that's occurring. The world is polarizing. Mm-hmm. You know, those who are wise and those who choose to stay in the darkness.
Yep, I agree. I can see it and feel it happening as well.
So God
is really looking for light, and they're looking for answers, and they're looking for love, and they're looking for truth.
Yep, and God has given them their source through people like you, Jeff.
Yes, thank you.
Well, we will be talking to you soon. Would you mind coming on the show again at another future date?
Oh, sure, I'd love that. Yeah.
And
great.
Nothing like getting a commitment on the air, right?
Oh, sure. No, I can talk about shamanism all day long, so, yeah.
See, we nail you while you're on the show, and that way we have witnesses.
Okay.
Say, well, he said he'd be on again, so now you have to be.
Yeah, now it's in the archives.
It is.
Sure, yeah, I'll be happy to.
Well, good, Jeffrey. We will probably see you on this November 7th for sure.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Molly. That's great.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeffrey.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And you have a good evening.
Okay.
All righty.
You do the same.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Molly, that was great.
I thought so. I just love him. I love all the classes that I've ever taken with him, which has only been like two, but I'm saying all, but I mean, they have been all day classes, but they go by so quickly because they're so chock full of information, and I just absolutely enjoy, you know, being his energy.
I enjoyed his energy through the show.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so knowledgeable, and I just enjoy him.
Well, speaking of good energy, directly after the buzz is the House of Mystery. Al Warren has got Aphrodite Jones from Investigation Discovery TV.
Hmm. I've heard the name before.
Yeah. So the So Z-Talk Radio is putting out quality. I mean, we've got, you know, we've got Jeffrey Rich, we've got Aphrodite Jones. I mean, what more could you want in just one channel?
I tell you, we just do it all, don't we?
We do. But, you know, I never really thought about shamanism in the way he described it. You know, when you think shaman, of course, you
thinking the American Indian shaman thing?
Yes. But yeah. They, you know, we tend to think that this is a new concept, I guess, because we're so Eurocentric that, you know, the connectedness of all things, that we've discovered this in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you drop some acid and, you know, wear fringes and you've got it all figured out. But this is ancient. This is ancient knowledge that is absolutely making its impact today.
And I, you know, I've heard so many people that's gone to Peru and taken these classes and everything of, you know, they come back really changed people and so enlightened and everything. I want to go. I just want to go. My grandson, who's 11, I guess is about 2 years ago, he said, you know where we need to go? And I said, where? And he said, Machu Picchu. I mean, this is coming from a 9-year-old.
But...
And I'm thinking, what do you know about Machu Picchu? And he said, well, we really need to go. But, I mean, he is an old soul.
You know, and it makes sense. Like he, you know, like Jeffrey just said, you know, we've lived this life over just through different eyes. So you're absolutely right. Why wouldn't he want to go back?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, kind of like you're feeling drawn back to Arizona, back to Tombstone, and you know, just between you, me, and the listener, so am I.
Yeah.
But, you know, why? Because we've been there before. We've lived this life in just different ways. In a roundabout way, he was kind of describing reincarnation.
Exactly. But, you know, like we were talking off air, I don't know what my draw is to go back there. Why? You know, I know I've had a past life there. I've had probably several past lives there. But I don't know what this one is leading me back there too, and I won't know until I get there.
Well, after tonight, maybe you're going back to your sacred space.
I think so. Well, you know, it's very much the Catalina Mountains that are calling me, and you know, it like I said, I don't want just the view of them from a distance. You know, they're gorgeous, but I have to be there in their energy. I have to be up in the canyon and be there.
Well,
if that makes any sense.
It
but,
does.
You know, it's like I have to be in the energy itself.
I understand.
So I'm just, you know, I can hardly wait to get there.
Well, Molly.
Well, Kevin.
It's that time.
There he is again. That little booger, he just comes in every week and ruins it all, doesn't he?
He does. Damn him.
Take a wet rag and wipe the bar off somewhere else. Quit flashing those lights.
Well, everybody, you've been listening to The Buzz on ztalkradio.com. You've been here with Molly and Kevin, and we will be back with you next week, next Monday night at 8 p.m. Central, with another exciting show, although I'm not quite sure how we're going to top tonight, but we will. We shall endeavor to do so.
Yeah. So we're going to roll it out with the beer barrel polka.
Yes, it's tradition.
Get on their dancing shoes.
And this is Britta's favorite part of the show, from what I understand.
Well, it's still Oktoberfest season, so.
Yeah, well, at least October.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, just stay tuned. Don't you turn that dial, because coming up next is the House of Mystery with Al Warren and Aphrodite Jones. So stay tuned.
This has been a production of the Z Talk Radio Network.